This is my first podcast. This is Black Tron with the Black Tron from the Bay and Beyond podcast. I'm doing this first podcast about my daughter, Jasmine. About 3-4 years ago, I get a phone call saying that how my daughter was in a car accident and that either she fell asleep at the wheel or had a seizure. They said she was driving down the hill and just went straight into a parked car. A family friend was in the car with her. She broke her arm. So I'm getting phone calls and the family friend, grandmother, who's really like a mother to me, was very upset that her granddaughter was hurt. You know, it was a lot of words being said because, you know, it was bones broken. Everybody assumed that my daughter was on some type of drugs. So, you know, we got that pretty much under control. And then about a week later, my daughter was in another accident on the freeway. And she had my granddaughter in the car with her, her daughter. And you know, she had another seizure. And I, you know, now this is 2 accidents, so I'm really concerned. I tell her, you know, you gotta go to the hospital, you have to get checked, you know, you gotta stop driving with the baby in the car. And, you know, so she says she was. Now, my daughter, Jasmine, was always respectful to me. She was always a respectful kid. She was 20 years old. She had been in the streets, you know, a lot. You know, she was a wild kid, but she was always respectful to me. She never raised her voice to me in her life up to this point. And, you know, I'm telling her, you can't be driving with my granddaughter in the car and you have any seizures. You know, you have to get treated, stop driving. Well, about 2 weeks later, my daughter had another accident with my granddaughter in the car. Now, by this time, I'm through the roof. You know, I'm cussing her out. I'm telling her, this is unacceptable. We're not having this. So, I'm going to take my granddaughter from you. You know, I'm letting her know this is not good. Then I started getting phone calls that she's driving around in a car with no brakes. The car is metal to metal. So my dad, you know, he just couldn't take it no more. He went and bought all the parts, paid the mechanic, fixed the brakes. He told my daughter, you're missing 2 studs. I don't want to, don't drive that car. I'll get the rest of the stuff done in the morning. He says my daughter looked right in the face and said, okay, granddad, and walked off, got in the car and drove off. He was like, he couldn't believe that. So then I get a call maybe a month after this saying that my daughter was fighting her kid's father. And, you know, they had been together for years. I've never heard of that, you know. So the first time I go ask him, he says it didn't happen. They weren't fighting. A couple of weeks later, my sister and my mother calls me telling me this, that he's over there putting his hands on my daughter. By this time, I am highly upset. I want blood now, you know. But I go to the man and I tell him, you have a daughter, right? He says, yes, Pops, I do. I says, you have a daughter by my daughter. I said, what would you do if someone was hurting your daughter? He said, I would do everything in my power to make sure it didn't happen. And I said, well, I'm going to do the same for mine. He He said, I'm not hitting her, Pops. It's not true. He said, Pops, I don't know what's wrong with her. She's having these seizures and she's getting violent. So as he's telling me this story, you know, at the time they had got my uncle had a one bedroom house and he had rented it out to him. And so the next door neighbor was a family friend. And I walked out and he was like, hey, nephew, what you doing? He was like, boy. And I'm telling you, man, you know, I had to come check on my daughter because they say that her boyfriend is over here beating her up. He said, nah, man, that's not true. He said, I'm here every day. He said, man, I hear her. She in there beating on that boy. I'm like, what? He's like, man, your daughter in there beating on him. So, you know, I talked to my daughter. I tell her she got to keep her hands to herself. What is she doing? Hitting on this man. And all of a sudden, my daughter passes out and have a seizure. So I call 911. The ambulance come. They grab my daughter. They put her in the back. Within 2 minutes, she's back up. She's jumping up. She's running around the street. And so the paramedics asked, was she on any drugs? I said, no. She drinks. She may smoke a little weed. He said, well, when people have seizures, they normally are very tired after a seizure and just want to sleep. Your daughter is having energy. He's like, man, and this is my third time here this week. I don't think these are seizures. So now my brain is like going crazy. Like, is my daughter on drugs? What's going on? These mood swings, these seizures, all these things happening. What, you know, I'm trying to figure out what's going on. So, her boyfriend gets up. They tell us that she has to go get her medicine. She hadn't been taking her medicine. So her boyfriend gets up and he says, I'm going to go walk and get it. I asked him, do we want to have a ride? He said, no, he's going to walk. The young man walked 10 miles because the place where they were, he thought they were, they weren't. He had to walk 10 miles to get my daughter's medicine there and back. So, you know, while this young man walked there, one of my nieces called me and she said, Uncle, I know that you think he's beating on her, but he's not. I was there. I had been staying with him. And she's been attacking the boy. She's been beating him with belts and everything. And all he was doing was defending himself. So, you know, I'm hearing the stories from two people that was there, but I'm also hearing the stories from my mother and my sister, and they saying the boy is beating her, but then the people that's there saying he's not. And I don't, you know, and I'm confused here. So, I had to talk as a father. I'm gonna be cautious on things, and I'm walking and I'm looking around the house and making sure that I don't see any signs of drug use and things like that. And so I guess the next weekend they go out to Vegas and my daughter loses all the money gambling, and she's mad that her boyfriend doesn't have any more money, and she kicks the roof off of his Mustang convertible, kicked the whole roof off. So he pulls over and he puts her out the car. So I get a phone call about that. My mother saying he's no earthly good. He put her out. He put his hands on her. My stepfather, everybody, they mad at this man, right? So I ask him what happened. He tells me it was no way that he was going to drive in a car with her from Las Vegas back to California when she was acting the way she was acting. Now, I'm asking, man, is she on any drugs? He said, no, I don't use drugs. You know, she don't use drugs. And so I'm kind of confused here. So my daughter's still having these seizures. This is going on for maybe, at the time, 5 months, maybe longer. She's going through all these episodes. And one day, it's my anniversary, and me and my wife drives to Reno. So we drop my two youngest daughters and my son off to my mother and my father and my sisters to watch over the weekend. Now, by this time, my daughter had lost her place. So, you know, she had been staying over there. So I get a phone call from my kids saying that my daughter has them locked in the bathroom. My daughter Jasmine has three of my kids locked in the bathroom, three of my daughters, and she's outside with a knife and a drill trying to get in. But they're laughing, but at the same time, I can tell they were scared. So I call my sister, Portia, and I tell her to handle that situation, to make sure my kids are safe and everything, and talk to my oldest daughter. So she does, and so that happened Friday. On Sunday, on my way back from Reno, my phone rings. As soon as I get in the car, and it's my daughter Jasmine. I'm like, "What's up?" She like, "What's up, Dad?" I'm like, "Huh? What's up with you?" "Hello? What's up with you, Dad?" I'm like, "What are you talking about, Jasmine? Why my sister's hair not combed?" I said, "What do you mean your sister's hair not combed? My sister's over here and their hair is all messed up." I said, wait a minute. They've been there all weekend with three older sisters, their auntie and their grandmother. Couldn't none of you do their hair? My sister's hair is all messed up, and she's just going off and she's talking to me aggressively. And I mean, just being rude and cussing at me. And I told my daughter, "Look, you ain't gonna talk to me like that. No kid of mine is going to talk to me like that." So I hung up the phone on her. She called me for 3 hours straight, cussing me out, leaving me messages. She started calling my wife, going crazy. I called my mother. I asked what's going on. My mother says she's going to talk to her. She don't know what's going on. Now, in my mind, this girl is on some strong drugs. This is what's going through my mind. So I pull up to my parents' house, and she comes running out the house. And her hair is sticking up on her head like she done stuck her hand inside a power plug. And first thing I can say is, "You talking about your sister's hair? What about your hair?" And she started banging on my car window with so much force, I thought she was going to break the window. So I hop out the car, and I tell her back up from my car. She reached out and grabbed my rosary beads off my neck and snatched them. Then she started clawing at my face and my arms. So I grab her, and I bend her into a ball, and I just hold her. My mother yells out the window, "Don't hit her, don't hit her." I look back up and said, "I'm not going to hit my daughter, but I'm also not going to let my daughter hit me. And I'm also not going to let my daughter disrespect me. I'm your father, and I will not be disrespected by my kid." So I held her there. My mother came out and grabbed her. My wife grabbed her, and she was going off cussing me out. Now, the look in my daughter's eyes as this was going on was, the only way I can describe it is like she was possessed. My daughter has hazel eyes, but her whole eyes changed shape. They changed color. It was like I was looking into a demon. The only way I can describe this is like how you, the old days when they said a person was possessed. This is what that looked like to me. This was the first time I'd ever seen this look in her eyes. And now, mind you, my daughter at the time is 20 years old. She had never raised her voice to me. She had never disrespected me a day in her life. But now she's attacking me. She's cussing me out. She's trying to break my windows. I couldn't understand this. So I get my other kids and I get them in the car and I tell my daughter, "Until you apologize to me, you will never speak to me again. I don't care what you're going through until you apologize." You know, you attacked me in front of my other kids, and I will not allow any of my kids to disrespect me like that. You doing this in front of your younger siblings, and they may think it's okay for them to do that, and there's no way I'm going to allow it. So I drove off, and I went home. A couple of weeks later, I get a phone call from my mother saying that, could I go to the hospital and sign some papers for Jasmine because she can't make it up there today? And I said, what do you mean, sign some papers for Jasmine? She went to go get a checkup or something? She said, oh no, Jasmine been in the hospital for 5 days. She's in a coma. And I'm like, what? What do you mean she's in a coma? And why did nobody call me to tell me that my daughter was in a hospital in a coma? So what ended up happening is they took my daughter to go get on unemployment in San Francisco, and she passed out at the unemployment office and had a seizure. They rushed her to the hospital. Thank God this time she was having the seizures that she was in San Francisco. They took her to UC, you know, and that's a training hospital. So they took her there. And as they were going to release her, she had another seizure. So they kept her in. And my daughter, they put her in an induced coma. I think that's what they said. But as she was there, this was 5 days. So I jump in my car and I rush out to the hospital. And I go in and I see my daughter. And she went from 130 pounds to like 80 pounds. And she has tubes in her. They done cut her throat and they're feeding her through the tube. And I'm just devastated. So they call the doctor, and the doctor comes up and they tell me that my daughter has an autoimmune disease. It's called anti-MNDA respiratory encephalitis. I think that's what it's called. They said, look up a book or a movie called Brain on Fire, and it'll tell you a lot about the disease. But what the disease does is it overheats the brain, and some of the symptoms are violence, irritation, seizures, panic attacks, hearing voices, seeing things, all these symptoms that my daughter had been going through. Now, I'm sitting here like, wow, my daughter, my baby was sick even when she attacked me, and I didn't know that my daughter was sick, and I'm mad at my daughter from something she couldn't control, and I was just devastated. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking at my daughter, and this is my oldest kid. All kind of thoughts is going through my head as they're telling me about this disease that I've never heard of, that only 3,800 people has ever been diagnosed with in the world. And I tell the nurse, I said, look, I live 2 hours away, but I want to be getting updates on my daughter. So is anything I can do to make sure you guys, when I call, give me updates? She says, yes. You can put in a code word, and we will, when you call, you just say the code word, and we know that you're somebody we can give the information to. And we'll automatically give you information on your daughter. You're the father, so you and the mother has, unless she's married, you have power of authority. I said, okay. So I think of a code word and I give it to her. She puts it in the computer. I go back in the room with my daughter. 5 minutes later, I hear the nurse on the phone. She calls me out. She was like, "Here, somebody wants to talk to you." I take the phone and say, "Hello, it's my mother." She's cussing me out, telling me that I can't do this. I can't, and she's just going crazy and just, you know, talking to me. And I'm like, "What are you talking about? I need to know about my granddaughter and this." And I said, "Well, what is the problem?" "They told me you can't be putting no codes in this." Wait, hold on. First off, I just put that code in 5 minutes ago. I had no time to call you or no one else to give y'all that code. But I'm here at the hospital with my daughter who had been here for 5 days that you knew about, looking at her with feeding tubes and everything on her near death. And you want to call and tell me what I can do or can't do as her father? That was so hurtful to me. I was in the lowest place of my life, and my mother chose that time to attack me. Didn't give me five, I didn't have 5 minutes after that code was in. She wouldn't even give me a chance to explain, and she attacked me viciously at one of the lowest times of my life. That really hurt. But I had to be there for my daughter. So I told her, "This is the code, and you can give it to whoever you want." The code wasn't to stop anybody from getting in for any information. The code was so I can get information when I call about my daughter. That day put a big divide between me and my mother, because as a father, you're my mother. So if some, you know, you can speak on me, but I was there, and my kid's mother was there when we made her. That was mine. And I don't think anyone had the right to do how they did me. I've never been a deadbeat dad. I've been in my daughter's life all her life. And for my daughter to be in the hospital for 5 days and no one tell me and then call me and treat me like that was devastating. My daughter ended up being in a coma for 3 months. And she finally woke up and she came home. She came home to my mother's house. My mother has a very big house. And she had a 6-bedroom house, so she had extra rooms, and my daughter moved in with her. And they were taking care of her. She had to learn how to walk again. Now, this is where her story gets a little confusing to some. Well, not to some. I say my daughter was home for 4 days before she got up and went to the club. My parents say it was 2 weeks. I don't know. 4 days, 2 weeks. I don't know. But my daughter got up and started going out to the clubs again. And she couldn't remember none of the episodes for 6 months that she was having. She couldn't remember any of the things that was going on. So slowly, she started getting better. Then she would relapse a little bit. See, these are the symptoms of brain on fire. NMDA, that's the disease. NMDA. These are some of the symptoms. They start to get worse, then they get better. And so she was still having episodes during the months after this. And she went from being like 80 pounds to maybe about 180. And because she didn't realize that she was sick, she wouldn't take her medicine because she couldn't remember the sickness. And so New Year's Day, she decided to go out. Well, after she went out, she checked herself into a hotel. This was a year and a half, almost 2 years later, my daughter checked herself into a hotel. And the next day, I'm at home. I get a phone call from my third daughter. And she says, "Dad, where's Jasmine?" I said, "I don't know. Jasmine don't live with me. What do you mean, where's Jasmine?" "Oh, I'm looking for her. She's not answering the phone." I said, "Okay, well, let me call her, see where she at." So I called. No response. I was like, "Okay." Called my daughter. I said, "Well, y'all keep me informed. Let me know." So my wife and my three younger kids wanted to go and play in the snow. But for some reason, my body, it was just aching and hurting. I was sweating. I didn't know what was wrong with me. So I let them go up to the snow, and they went and played in the snow. And I stayed home. Didn't know what was wrong with me, but I was feeling like I was dying. So fast forward to 8 o'clock the next morning, 8:30. My sister calls me and says, "Where's your daughter?" I said, "Jess just called me last night, asked me the same thing." She says, "The coroner just called and says they have your daughter's body in the corner. She's dead." My whole world dropped. My soul dropped. My heart dropped. I was in disbelief. I got the number to the corner and I called. Told them who I was and that I was calling to see if I need to come down and identify my daughter's body. Now I'm hoping that he would say yes and I would get there and somebody had stole her purse. There's something. The coroner told me no, need to come in. We've already fingerprinted her. We know it's her. You can come in and sign the papers to get the body after the autopsy. I was devastated. My daughter was found in a hotel. Young black woman in a hotel. You know, the rumors were spreading. What was she doing in a hotel? Somebody killed her. Everything was just going through my head. And I was floored. My baby was 22 years old. And my baby was gone. I had to wait 4 months for the autopsy to come back. And the autopsy said she died from anti-MNDA, respiratory encephalitis. My daughter died from a disease that only 3,000 people has had. And she just was one of the people that had it. Out of the 3,000 people that have had it, 4% of the people relapse into the sickness. And out of the 4% that do relapse, 41% dies. My daughter, Jasmine Busby, was one of them. That disease took my kid away from me, took my kid away from her daughter, took my kid away from her mother, her sister, her brothers, her friends, her family. I'm making this podcast because this is Jasmine's story. You may know somebody with this disease. It's curable. They can be helped. You just have to know the signs and get on top of it and make sure they take their medicine. You don't want to go through the loss like us. Nicole lost a daughter. I lost a daughter. Her stepmother and her stepfather lost a daughter. We lost someone. And is devastating to me. It's a loss that I'm still not over, and I don't think I ever will be over. But I wanted to share with you the madness that we went through for 2 years dealing with this crippling disease. The book Brain on Fire, she said she went through 1 month of this. I went through years of this with my daughter. And I wish it on no one else. So I hope you enjoyed this story. It is our truth. It is the story of Jasmine Busby, who was loved and who is loved. This is Black Tron with Black Tron from the Bay and Beyond podcast, signing out.